Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Monday, March 6th, although you wouldn't know it to look outside. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. Ms. Ames, get us started, please.
We're going to open the
Are we having a different... No, we left that one open. We've always left that one open. No? Okay, I'm opening another public hearing on House Bill 5026, the Oregon Health Authority.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay, now it's your
turn. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, today the agency will be doing a presentation on some of their more administrative functions, central services, and state government assessments and statewide enterprise costs. And the CFO analyst will be doing at the end of the day a summary of the governor's budget for the whole agency, not just this. And then we actually only have one more agency presentation on Thursday. It'll be the wrap-up. Wow.
Hard to believe.
Okay. The floor is yours.
Good morning. Chair Steiner Hayward, co-chair, Rayfield, and the committee. My name is Mark Fairbanks. I'm the CFO for the Oregon Health Authority, and I have with me today.
Good morning. My name is Leanne Johnson. I am the director of the Equity and Inclusion Division for the Oregon Health Authority.
Good morning. My name is Julie Johnson, and I'm the interim tribal affairs director for the Oregon Health Authority.
So I'm going to go through a few slides with my colleagues on the central services, as Linda pointed out. The central services part of the agency, this is the group assemblage of functions that provide agency-wide support and strategic alignment for our resources to help the agency on its goals. And so the key functions within central services include fiscal and operations, so that would be primarily my wheelhouse. Human resources, all the finance and budget staff, and then central operations, which is primarily procurement for the agency, records management, public records requests, and facility management. The Office of Equity and Inclusion resides in central services, as does external relations and tribal affairs. So on the next slide, slide three, we give you a quick list here of what these functions do. So I'll walk through these quickly. We provide oversight for the financial responsibility and sustainability of CCOs, the solvency and sustainability of deploying the resources across the whole agency. We have human resources, recruitment, training, management, coaching. This is the body of work around performance improvement and creating a performance culture. I can talk about that a little bit later. The program integrity function for Medicaid resides in fiscal and operations, and I've already talked a little bit about public records requests, and obviously there's timely delivery of all the information for public media and legislatures, constituent services for the plan. We have the ombudsperson resides in central services, and county government coordination. So those are a brief list of what goes on in central services. The next slide
Mr.
for...
Mr. Fairbanks?
Yes.
Hold on 1 second. Yes.
Senator Winters. Excuse, Senator Winters.
A couple questions, because would you... And on the recruitment, training, and management coaching, are you doing that both for DHS as well as OHA, and what type of training and coaching are you doing, or is it just generic?
Co-chairs and the committee, Senator Winters. I would say the answer to that question is that, well, first of all, our human resources function is serving just the agency. So the Oregon Health Authority, we work very closely with both DHS and DAS, so Madeline Zeik's team and Becky at DHS. The training is divisional.
I'm going to back up.
Yeah.
Is it just the accounting and those services that you're doing, shared services, or is this just the slides for OHA and not your shared services?
This is just for OHA.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, Senator Winters, we will do a shared services day with both DHS and OHA at the end of the DHS month.
Thank you. That's good.
Thank you very much, Senator Winters.
But you're doing programmatic activity in also in your central services, because if I look at some of your categories, both some are programs. Maybe that's just my definition of programs. but I'm looking at your Oregon Healthcare Ombudsman, for example, which is a function that, and I'll talk to Lynn later, that is a problem-solving, troubleshooting function, and yet it's in your central services.
Correct. The central services, some of these services, I would say that OEI, probably the Office of Equity and Inclusion, would be more programmatic or program-led. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are services that really are the administrative net, if you will, the support structure, the foundation to support all of the agency's activities, and we have specific programs that are also aligned inside of this particular category.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next chart, or the next slide, I was going to just briefly point out is...
I'm so sorry, Mr. Fairbanks.
Yes, no problem.
County government coordination, is that working with county... Can you just clarify what that means for us as well?
You know, I don't know that I really have those details, exactly what's going on with community support.
Okay. If Ms. Johnson, does one of you want to talk about that? Or
well,
is that...
One area that... resides within external relations is the county government coordination of the Bobby Green, that work that he does.
If I can, doesn't help me a whole
okay,
lot.
Okay.
We'll get the right answer here in a second.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Come on up.
Chair Stenner Hayward, Chair Rayfield. For the record, Justin Black, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Health Authority. So what it means is, public health and our mental health, our behavioral health programs have a lot of interaction with counties. A lot of you have heard about the work that's going on in Jackson County. Bobby Green, who is a member of the External Relations Division, is kind of the glue that holds that together. So we hold a number of consultations, basically, with AOC, with county governments. We do frequent presentations to county boards. As we were looking this summer for public health modernization, we do a lot of back and forth with counties. So it's to clearly describe that partnership that we have with the counties as we do our work. We try to stay in step with counties and make sure that they're well informed of the work that we're doing at the agency level and that we're well informed of the work that's happening at the county level so that it's done in partnership.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mr. Black. Mr. Fairbanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. So, on page 4 is a organizational chart for essential services. Note the functions that are circled in red. And talk a little bit about our strategic business priorities in the Fiscal and Operations Division. One of the things that we did shortly after I joined, which was in May of 2010, was to really focus on the top priorities for our agency. So we went through an exercise of strategic planning and created a plan. It has 10 pretty well articulated priorities, and two of them reside on slide 5 because they are directly related to my responsibility. There's some shared ownership amongst the division leaders of our strategic plan, but these two particular ones fall squarely into the fiscal place. So we maintain a fiscally sustainable budget. And we are going to be working very hard to empower and strengthen the skills and capabilities of our employees. This gets to the performance culture or performance management I was talking about earlier. So within fiscally sustainable budget, certainly what we're doing is supporting the health system transformation. We keep an eye on the budget and create, you know, the path forward in a sustainable manner for those for all of the activities happening in the transformation area of the organization. Regulatory oversight of the CCOs, all of their quarterly and interim financials, plus their audited annual financials. The actuarial oversight, our actuarial firm Optimus, we manage that through our actuarial services unit. We ensure that transformation is occurring within our 3.4% sustainable target. And again, Medicaid program integrity is part of the fiscally sustainable algorithm. I won't say much more about HR, except that we're hard at work there with actually recruiting a new director and doing a little bit of a restructure and energizing that team around supporting the agency as we see it over the next 2 to 3 biennium. So with that, I will turn it over to Leanne to speak about the Office of Equity and Inclusion.
Thank you, Mark. Co-chairs and representatives and senators, my name is Leanne Johnson, and I'm going to be speaking for the next few minutes regarding the Equity and Inclusion Division of the Oregon Health Authority. As Mark mentioned, this is a real strong programmatic piece that resides within Central Services. The work that, in general, the work that we do in the Office of Equity and Inclusion relates to state and federal requirements, so compliance pieces, as well as technical assistance, consultation, and the implementation of programs and policies. So you can see that there is a bit of a rundown here of some of our primary key areas on this slide. You may be familiar with the race, ethnicity, language, and disability demographic, or REAL-D data collection. This ensures that we are able to identify more clearly the disparities that exist within the system, within the health delivery system. For example, if we disaggregate a Pacific Islander from Asian, we will see a very different complexion, if you will, of issues within the within those two general population areas. Alternate format and language access services policies, that is a requirement also by federal requirements, and that ensures that people who we are serving get their information, their health information, any type of programming or communication, that they get that information in the language, their primary language, which also would include Braille, American Sign Language, captioning, and so forth. We do also work in the area of recruitment and retention of a diverse workforce. It's important that our workforce is reflective not only of our communities within the state, but also those which we serve. Sure. So there is work as it relates to that.
Senator Whitman?
Yes.
Ms. Johnson,
yes,
what are the challenges that you are encountering in order to carry out the program of inclusion in the workforce?
Inclusion in the workforce, there are a variety of issues that converge, if you will. One of the areas is retaining once we recruit a workforce. So we are working to, on the training aspects that Mr. Fairbanks spoke of, we are working to develop a cultural competent workforce so that when we do recruit...
What does that mean?
That means a workforce that is prepared to navigate across cultural differences and do that effectively and do that for the sake of the work and also provide service that is culturally attentive to the broader community.
Thank you. Representative Alonso Leon.
Yes, I'd like to follow up on that, Ms. Johnson. Can you tell me what your demographic breakdown of staffing is right now in your office that supports, obviously, the diversity and inclusion work?
In our office or in the agency?
In the agency, yes, okay. Thank you.
I do have a dashboard that we can send to you that would have that in complete detail. I can read it to you right now if you'd like. It's pretty extensive because we do break down by seven or eight populations, and we do have a variety of other ways we look at it, including management services versus the broader agency. Is there a specific question, Representative, about any specific population that I could assist with at this time?
Follow up. Please send it to all of us. I think it'd be good for all of us to see what the demographic breakdown is. But I would also like your opinion around whether we are close to meeting your goals around making sure we have a comprehensive perspective on the work that you're doing in diversity and inclusion. Sure. And do we have enough people in the agency that reflects the population you're serving?
So we do not have enough people in some categories that reflect the populations that we are serving or that even reflect the representation of the workforce within the state of Oregon. I can run down very quickly where we are doing well and where we have areas that we're working on that we've recently identified. So, of course, we're doing well as it relates to the white population. We are doing well relating to the African-American black population. We are doing well, and then this is overall agency, not by division. Or in the overall agency, we are doing well when it relates to Native American indigenous population of the state of Oregon. We're doing well in the general Asian population. And when you see the dashboard, you'll see that these areas are identified as green, and that it's a parity calculation. We are not doing well with Pacific Islanders. That's that disaggregation. We are doing well with two or more races. We are not doing well with the Latino-Latina population, nor with people with disabilities, nor with veterans, and we are doing well with women. So that's a general rundown.
So, can you follow up? Tell me what your definition of doing well is. That, I think, would help me better understand
sure.
what that means. And what is your
right.
goal?
Yeah, right. So we function on a parity calculation, which is derived from the 2014 population data of the American community, ACS American Community Standards, American Community Survey Standards, pardon me. And we look at a parity calculation which relates to the number of people in the state of Oregon that are employable. So we're not looking at, you know, under 18, and you know, we're looking at the population that is in the market for employment. And so when we're doing well, that means we are within 95% of whatever that parity calculation is. It's not a percentage, it's a parity. So what we're looking for is equity. We're looking for, we have a standard set, and we're looking, which is determined by a parity calculation, and then we're looking to see how close we are to that. If we're within 95%.
I'm going to interrupt you. You need to explain what the parity calculation
okay.
is,
yes.
because that's, if it's not a percentage-related population, then we need to understand what
sure.
that
sure, it's a calculation
is.
That is done, and I do not know the, I'm not a analyst to know the internal structure of that, but it relates to, rather than comparing to the general population of the state of Oregon, because that would include the entire population, and the entire population is not employable. It does relate to the specific population, the representation of people that are employable within the state of Oregon.
So just to be clear, and I'm sorry, Representative,
you can go back to your question,
but I need to make sure I understand
yes.
this. To be clear, it could be that the demographic makeup in terms of race and ethnicity of the population of 18 to 64 year olds is different than the demographic breakdown of the entire state.
Absolutely.
Or
yes.
the
yes.
0
yes.
to 18. And so that's what you're looking at. You're looking at percentages essentially, but only for the 18 to 64
mm-hmm.
population.
Mm-hmm. And it's by parity, it also looks at the relationship to that specific population. So we also within that have the opportunity to compare so that we're not comparing to a broader, if we have like a small Pacific Islander population, we are working to hire to reflect that population, so yes.
You good, or do you have any other follow-ups?
I'm fine.
Okay,
we'll make sure. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this, and I'm looking forward to getting your material, but I think this is a conversation that I think this panel would like some clarity. We could spend a lot more time
yeah.
with this because it's very, so far, confusing. So we'll loop back on this. So, you know, for me, I do want
yeah.
some more clarity.
All right.
And for just to remind the committee that when we ask questions like this, we ask witnesses to send the material to Ms. Ames, and then she posts them on the day the question was asked and lets us know. So just as a reminder, and also to the listening public. So that's what we'll expect back, is a little bit more detail mm-hmm. on that dashboard, and whether that's a link or more descriptive information, either is great. So thank you.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Another area that actually is of critical use to us is the culturally and linguistically appropriate service standards. Those are requirements that come from Health and Human Services. And most of our policy work and our program work is reflective of those standards. So we are working around creating effective, equitable, respectful quality care and culturally responsive to meet the culturally responsive needs of the patient and member population. It also requires that we have a governance system. There are programs and policies that promote health equity. And then other areas of those standards include language access, the diverse workforce that we've just spoke about, accurate and reliable demographic data, a grievance process so that if people feel they have been denied services based on protected class, they have a place to go, and as well as communication and community engagement. Those are all areas that exist within those standards, and those are all areas where our programs and policies are reflected in those standards, by those standards. Another area that relates to the work we do is discrimination and harassment, or discrimination and harassment-free workforce. And so our office does investigations as it relates to a protected class civil rights.
I'm sitting here and I'm listening because this is very big and very broad. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your staffing is, but if I look at the actual function that you're outlining here, it tells me that you've got both the development work as well as the compliance work as well as I'm trying to wrap my head around all of these various categories and how much real work and how many staff do you have in your operation?
Yes, Senator Winters, thank you. We have currently 20 people in the Equity and Inclusion Division doing this work. And we have within that 15 or so functions. So there are only 5 people that are doing duplicative work, and that's the investigations. Everyone else has their own specific function, and when you look at this list, that's reflected in this list.
You said you have another one.
A follow-up. So you have 5 individuals doing the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You have 15 others that's doing program development or somehow setting standards and working with the feds and working with the community and all this other good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that begs to tell me that statewide that probably we don't have that many complaints coming in?
We have, from the public's perspective, we have right now about 5 active cases from the broader state of Oregon. Internal within the Oregon Health Authority, one of the metrics I want to show you on the next page or speak to on the next page, within this last year of 2016, just to give you a sense of volume, we had 54 inquiries, and we were able to resolve or refer those inquiries as it relates to civil rights, and we had 61 cases within the Oregon Health Authority that were investigated. So that would be the volume of our internal investigations and our external investigations. We do a lot of technical assistance with the coordinated care organizations and consultation. So one of our primary goals is to provide information so that we are preventing discrimination complaints, we are preventing harassment complaints, and we are dealing proactively with the issues and with the education that exist.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Another area that we work in is accessibility for the public. So this relates to the Americans with Disabilities Act and accessibility to programs, to information, to events, to communication tools. That piece resides within our office, so accessibility for the public. Some specific programs. One would be the Regional Health Equity Coalitions. There are 6 coalitions throughout the state that ensures that we are looking at regional issues as it relates to health equity and regional solutions. Traditional health workers and healthcare interpreters, those 2 programs help ensure cultural and language attentiveness within our system. So traditional health workers are individuals that work within the care team, specifically with culturally diverse and ethnically diverse groups. Healthcare interpreters provide language access or interpretation services primarily, predominantly, to members and to recipients of care that may not have English as their primary language. Cultural competence and continuing education, that relates to our 22 health licensing boards, to ensure that those boards, as well as providers, coordinated care organizations, are indeed getting training that is effective and efficient and in alignment with cultural competency standards of 2017. Non-discrimination for the public, we've spoken about that already. We do investigations and consultation for the broader public, predominantly in the Oregon Health Plan. And then also we have a program called Developing Equity Leadership Through Training and Action. That's a health equity leadership training, and we're on our this year we're on our 6th cohort for that group.
It's the next slide. Do you want to?
I'll wait till you get.
Okay.
There.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator. Thank you.
Can I just ask? I have one quick question before
we
go off of this slide. How closely does your office work with the metrics and scoring group that looks at CCO metrics?
Yes.
Because it's not just I mean, you talk about disaggregating employee data, but it's also disaggregating healthcare disparities.
Oh, yes.
And I'm curious about when we look, it occurs to me to wonder, when we look at CCO metrics, do we disaggregate those in their populations?
Yes, and yes, Senator, thank you for the question. We do that. That's our primary work as it relates to the race, ethnicity, language, and disability.
Okay.
It also relates internally, but more importantly, it does relate to the metrics. And we do have a representative that serves on a variety of those committees.
Okay.
And we're working to get more and more data that are disaggregated as it relates to health and healthcare, disaggregated around race, ethnicity, so that we can address, identify, and address the true disparities that do indeed exist. Yes.
When you send us responses to questions today, would you please send us a link to where those data are available to the public, the disaggregated metrics for CCOs?
Yes.
When they're available?
Absolutely, Senator Steiner Hoover. Thank you.
Thank you very
yes.
much. Are we good? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I would just end by saying, I've already pointed this out, that we do provide technical assistance and consultation in all the areas that I just spoke of, because we need to be proactive in our learning as it relates to the work that we're doing around health equity and discrimination and harassment-free workplace.
Yeah. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up, because we thought you were going to include it in your presentation. On your civil rights investigation, do you coordinate with the Bureau of Labor, who has the responsibility for civil rights violations?
Senator Winters, thank you. Yes, we do coordinate with them. Our office or our division would provide, if there was an inquiry from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, we would respond.
Well, do you? And I'm going to go back,
yes.
because they have the responsibility
yes.
by statute.
Yes.
Of actually pursuing and investigating
yes.
civil rights violations. So do you actually refer cases to them to continue their work, or how does that interface occur between you and the civil
right.
right and the Bureau of Labor?
Yes, Senator Winters. So it's a two-way street. So they may refer cases to our office, and we also, if an individual is not satisfied with what they have with a finding, within the Oregon Health Authority, we will refer them to Bureau of Labor and Industries. So it's a two-way street back and forth.
That's interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. On the next slide, you can see that there are a variety of data points. And this is just to give you a sense of what we did this last year in 2016. We did indeed certify 1,506 traditional health workers, qualified and certified 151 healthcare interpreters. The Regional Health Equity Coalition work is broad. As I said, it does expand across six primary regions. That includes multiple counties, 156 community organizations, and they have done 141 community trainings, reaching 935 organizations as it relates to health equity and health equity needs and the social determinants of health. We've spoken of the civil rights investigations. I've provided the 54 resolved cases, resolved and referred issues, 61 cases investigated. And then also we have graduated our fifth health equity leadership or Delta cohort this last year, which included a pilot program in Central and Eastern Oregon. So the point here being is that we have, yes, both compliance pieces, requirements, and then also programmatic policy pieces that where we do implement health equity best practice.
Ms. Johnson, I would assume that there are communities where traditional health workers might be useful but don't have them. What kinds of outcome tracking are we doing to show how communities where traditional health workers are available, whether their outcomes are better than communities where they're not available?
Certainly that. Thank you, Senator Steiner Hayward. That's a very good question, and that's something that we're working towards. Right now, we are working to get them certified throughout the state and now moving into that type of analysis that you're asking.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yeah, Senator, I'm ripping up. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's a little, the whole side of the table thing. Yeah, no.
Director Johnson, I want to acknowledge that diversity and inclusion is a lot of work. And I want to acknowledge the work that you're doing so far. And I want to ask you a question that I that I hope helps us all understand that sometimes we realize that there's a lot of work, and I want to try to understand whether your department specifically has enough staffing. And I think that's important to learn and understand, because there is a lot of work.
Yes.
And I want to acknowledge the work that you're doing so far. And we ask a lot out of our offices and the departments often, but it's also important for us as legislators to understand if we have the capacity in our departments. So would you tell us, do you have enough capacity to do all the work that you're asked to do?
Thank you, Representative Alonzo Leon. I appreciate the question. We have scoped our work to meet so that it's within the capacity that we have been provided. I'm very proud to say that the Oregon Health Authority sees health equity and diversity and inclusion as a priority. And I'm proud to say that we are the greatest, and from the staffing perspective, have the largest staffing in any agency within the state of Oregon, which speaks to that commitment. There's always more work to do, and there is always, as a result of always more work to do, we have to be very, we have to discern what we can do and what we can't do. And in terms of more work, if we had more staff, we'd have more work. So at this point, I think with every division, every aspect of the state, we all have more work than we have the capacity to do. And this area in particular has traditionally, as a discipline, been understaffed. But what I can say about the Oregon Health Authority is that it is a commitment, and we are very fortunate to be able to work and do the work that we do, and do that within the capacity that we have provided.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been great
about answering questions. Let's keep
going. Thank you, Senator Steiner, here with. I believe if there's no other questions, my colleague Julie Johnson will now speak.
Thank you.
I'd like to say Pajet and Wawa, and I honor my ancestors by being here today, and I want to thank you. It's an honor to be here today with you. I said good morning and how are you? I'm from Eastern Oregon. My family's from the Burns Paiute tribe. I lived and worked on the reservation in Warm Springs and Burns for the last 17 years. So I'm still kind of new to this state, but I'm just doing my best to serve our Indian people, because we have a lot of health disparities and we have a lot of struggles. But I'm here and I'm working hard and I got a great team. And so I just want to share some information with you today. We just have a couple key bullets on our slide. For me, and I think for our director, and just trying to get the important part across, is that we need to honor our tribes as government-to-government relationships, because each of those nine sovereign nations have their own government. And the federal trust responsibility of the federal government says that they have to provide health care to our Indian people. And it's not always the best health care. We have Indian health services, and we have laws, and we have guidelines. We have all of these great things, but our Indian people have struggled for many, many years. And so the responsibility that the federal government has to our people, it kind of comes down to the state. And so it's just a lot of the work that we do is working with all of the seven divisions across OHA to help them try to understand what those disparities are for our Indian people and how we can support them to get better, because, you know, diabetes and substance abuse and all of these horrible things that plague all of our people of Oregon, you know, we need to become healthier people. And so we have to work with government-to-government relationship with our tribes. And so in 2016, we had a number of different ways that we do that. And if you're familiar with Senate Bill 770, that's the law that guides our government-to-government relationship. So at the Oregon Health Authority, we have regular tribal monthly meetings every month. We get together with our tribal health directors. They help us come up with the agenda and work on the priorities that they see for their Indian people. We had in February of 2016, we had the Health Leaders Summit, and it was really well attended by all of our tribes. We had many tribal council members there, health staff, behavioral health staff, to really just sit down and talk with us, and so we can hear those needs and those concerns and those priorities that they have. We also hold four 770 Health and Human Services clusters meeting every year. We do that, and that actually involves six state agencies. So OHA does take the lead on that meeting. We work very closely with Department of Human Services, Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Veterans Affairs, Youth Development Council. All of those agencies work together to put on that Health and Human Services cluster meeting. And then when issues really come up and the tribes ask for a formal consultation, or the health authority can ask for a formal consultation, then that's really where we get down to the leadership level. So our director is there, and tribal council members are there, our designated health staff are there to talk about specific issues that are really we need to focus some time on. And so in 2016, we had four official consultations with the nine tribes of Oregon.
Could you just tell us a little bit more about what those are? I'm sorry. What kinds of things those consultations are about, Ms. Johnson?
Yeah, so the tribes can bring up really anything. They have some of the main issues. Of course, last year we were working a lot on the 1115 waiver, so we had a consultation around that. The one in February actually was really about some basic kind of programmatic issues, making sure that people were getting notified ahead of time, making sure that the leadership, you know, is always available and ready and, you know, there to answer questions. The FMAP, the 100% FMAP, the federal map for CMS, that the tribes are available to get reimbursed for those. Well, the state gets reimbursed for those, and it's a big savings for the state if the tribes want to do that. So those are some of the issues that we have. We actually just had a consultation in February around the Behavioral Health Collaborative to really look at the tribal behavioral health programs, and again, looking at their needs, their health disparities, what do their programs currently have, and what their programs need specific to tribes.
Okay, I'm going to circle back on the FMAP issue in a minute, but Representative Alonso Leon?
Yes, thank you, Director Johnson. I wanted to have a better understanding of your Tribal Health Leaders Summit. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from that summit that you could bring back as a state and that you can focus on work that needs to happen after? Mm-hmm.
There's actually one thing that has stuck in my head throughout this year, and I didn't get the chance to say, but I've been in this interim role for about 4 months, but I've been at the state a little bit longer, so I'm definitely always in a learning role. I believe we all are. But one of our health leaders said, the work that we do, you know, it's very important. Everybody works very hard, and it's very important. But how we do the work is just as important as the work that we do. So again, to me, it's just about keeping those communication lines open, being respectful and honest, and honoring that government-to-government relationship. I say that every day to people, and some people don't understand it, and some people don't, you know about it, and that's okay, and that's my job, is to try to get them to understand the best they can. So that was one major thing, was, you know, you can't just talk to one person here or one person there. That's not, you know, really the best communication style. You have to, when you're in a consultation with all of the nine tribes, you know, they're there together collectively, but then also individually. If a tribe requests for you to come to their council, then, you know, that's what we do. And but that was definitely one of the big things that I learned at that summit, was how we do our work is just as important as the work that we do.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to just add a little more context to the question. We probably are very unique in Oregon. Governor, before he was governor, and he was Senator Atiyah, and this body passed legislation to create the Indian Commission. It's probably one of the, Oregon was first, and probably, and it's very unique. Because there was a time in history there was no communication or relationship with the tribes. I can remember when I was at Children's Services Division, I was one of the few individuals that was allowed on Warm Springs to work with the tribes and the whole issue of child welfare. There was a huge distrust among the tribes in Oregon and the bureaucracy. kind of thing. So the work that has been done and working with the tribes and together the government-to-government summits and recognizing that the needs, whether it's health care, whether it's alcohol and drug treatment and all those other needs that we have, there is a need to begin bridging those gaps, and there is a need to begin to providing those access. So in doing so, there's a whole lot of nuances that also have to be overcome in this process. I just kind of know the history of where we are in Oregon and how some of this. So it's if you haven't been to some of the leadership summits, when they have them, I would encourage members to do so.
Thank you, Senator. That background is very helpful. Representative?
Yes, just a follow-up. So your office is under the Office of Equity and Inclusion, or is it a separate office within itself? And if it is, what is your staffing? How many people do you have in your office or your department?
So it's a really unique position. So we have 7 divisions across OHA. Tribal Affairs reports directly to the director, and so right now I'm a party of one. So it's a lot of work. I know Leanne, you know, like I said, I acknowledge how hard everybody works every day. I'm in this interim role, like I said, and I am a tribal liaison in my regular work, so we have other staff spread out through the agency that helps focus on tribes in different areas, like at Health Systems Division, working on all of the Medicaid issues, and at Public Health, working on those issues. So we do have people spread out through the agency in other divisions, but for tribal affairs specifically, I'm the only one.
Follow up. Yes, and then Representative Dillard.
Well, so when we talk about equity and inclusion, diversity and inclusion, and it being a priority, having one staff person on tribal affairs, to me, is not a priority. We should have more people doing this work. That's a value. So I don't know how we can make that happen, but I hope we can figure it out. She should have people working with her to really truly do a lot of great work. That is my recommendation. Equally with the Office of Equity and Inclusion, I think that Director Johnson was being very kind and gracious and appreciative of the work, but I think we need to make sure we have enough staffing to truly do great work, not that it's not happening, but we need to have more people. Our state is large, and our population keeps growing. We don't want to overwork our staff. We want to have them be really, really happy and stay here and stay with our state. But we need to have, I think, capacity.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bueller.
Yeah, I'm just curious why the separation of your office from the Office of Equity and Inclusion, why that organizational structure?
Yeah.
Representative Bueller, co-chairs in the committee, Representative Bueller, I'll take a stab at that one. I think specifically to the tribes, I think the tribal liaison has historically, and I think it's been acknowledged in our restructure of about a year ago, when just after Lynn arrived for the agency, that it belongs directly with the director of the agency, and it is a very specific liaison that wants to be called out in its prominence and its importance to the tribes in the state. So rather than put them together, I think the decision was made to actually keep the liaison apart. I'd also like to speak a little bit to the question that Representative Alonzo Leon asked, if I may. I think that like HR, human resources or human capital in general, the basic premise here is, and I think maybe what we could do as a follow-up, I would suggest to my colleagues, is describe the influence, if you will, the relationships of who's dealing with the tribes, because although Director Johnson doesn't have a staff per se, she has a great deal of influence over staff that exists within the divisions that have tribal contacts. And so she is the singular tribal liaison, but she has a great deal of interaction and influence on staffing within the agency to help get the work done. And similar to HR, if you're going to build, in my opinion and my experience, a high performance or a performance culture, particularly within the framework of a state government, to which I am now almost 2 years in. I think, you know, human resources, like these topics, these areas of cultural competency, are everyone's job. Everyone who manages a person needs to be very, very good at the body of work. Don't need to be experts. We have subject matter experts. But what we want to do is we want to take those experts and then have very deliberate, measurable way that we can inform and train first the agency staff and then our outside constituents. I always refer to these types of things as not a light switch. They're rheostats. And you have to turn them and turn them and turn them. But it's the trick is, how do you measure the value and the impact? And we are figuring that out. In some ways, there are measurable, very objective measures we can use. Otherwise, it's, again, it's survey tools, it's listening, it's constant communication, it's those types of things. But I hope I'm being a little helpful here, and that it's not that Julie Johnson is on an island. She actually has a fair amount of support going on around the tribes, including the director.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Thank you. There is a uniqueness that does not exist because of the sovereignty issue. And I made comments early on that Oregon is unique, that it was started a lot of years ago when then-Senator Attia created the commission, the Indian Affairs Commission. You will find no other, and I'm going to repeat that, no other commission that is independent that deals with external group except for the Indian Commission. And we did that, Senator Attia, before he became governor. He was probably, and I know if I go to Warm Springs and you go around, he is the tribal governor. Am I not correct? So there, it's that. And that relationship, that intergovernmental relationship that is existing and bringing, and you'll find it not only with this issue, but other issues that you will find an individual trying to, one, educate us, and two, bringing both the tribal needs and what exists in state government, hopefully, together.
Thank you, Senator. That background is very helpful. Please.
Oh, okay. Yes, I would just thank you for that, Senator Winters. And I actually believe that I think the tribes like to have that position at that level with a direct report to the director, because it is that important to them that we have this government-to-government relationship. And like Mark said, I do work with a lot of people through the agency, but I do appreciate your comment as well. So thank you. I just want to talk about uncompensated care a little bit. This was a program that was started a number of years ago. And forgive me again, I'm still learning a lot of this stuff, but in 2016, they went back to a number of claims and actually paid those, things that are no longer a part of the Medicaid benefits anymore, but the tribes can be still paid for them. And so OHA went through a long process of the tribes would submit all of their claims, and then they would go through each individual claim and see what was payable or not. The good thing about it is that was past claims, but now with the new 1115 waiver, those programs that were covered under the uncompensated care are now a part of the regular Medicaid program. So we're transitioning now. We're just finishing up those older claims, and now we're going to be transitioning into the new process that is just a part of the waiver.
So this leads me to one of my questions. One of the conversations that my co-chair and I have been having is around access to care mm-hmm. for tribal members who are on OHP. And we know that historically, tribal members have been assigned to open card rather than to CCOs. And on the one hand, we certainly value choice and offering our tribal members choice. On the other hand, we know that the number of providers who take open card is much lower than the number of providers who are members of CCOs and are providers on the CCO network. And I'm concerned about whether your tribal members actually have the level of access that they deserve. And the care coordination that has been proven to improve health outcomes, such as the ones that you referenced earlier in your testimony. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about that or would be willing to respond back to the committee with any thoughts after you consult among your tribes. Because I'm concerned, frankly, that our tribal members are not getting the quality of care they deserve on open card.
And the great thing about being in this position is working with those health directors that have been at this work for a very long time, and they're very committed to the work that they do, and listening to them, you know, every month come and bring these issues, because they're definitely concerned about access issues. Every tribe is different. You know, we have a couple tribes that have contracts with CCOs, mm-hmm. And those have kind of been a rough start, but we're getting there, and they're getting better, and, you know, I think time always gives us a little bit of cushion to improve our work. There's other tribes that are still not ready to go there, and that is, you know, the choice that the tribes have. You know, the tribal members have a lot of benefits that non-tribal members sure. don't have when they sign up for OHV. The choice to go fee-for-service or managed care. They don't have to have the penalty. They don't, you know, they have a lot of things to help them, but I agree with you. I think access is still an issue. I think, again, being from Eastern Oregon, rural frontier country, we know that access care, you know, access issues are in Eastern Oregon are issues. All of our reservations, tribal lands, are in very rural areas. Mm-hmm. And so they've talked a lot about, again, going back to the Behavioral Health Collaborative, you know, we've talked a lot about how hard it is to get those mental health therapists and those psychiatrists and, you know, those specialty care that our people need. So I think it's a process for sure. I think the tribes, again, everybody's so different. I mean, you can talk to one tribe and they're going to tell you something different than somebody else. But I think some tribes are definitely, but other tribes that haven't, that don't have a contract yet, are still interested in doing that. Again, they work on, the health directors primarily work on a lot of issues on their own, and then come to us and bring those to us because they're well prepared and well thought out and well researched, and they're very strong in their work, and they run the work groups that we work for uncompensated care and FMAP and all of those things. So
I'm going to request, if you would be so kind, if you schedule an appointment with me just so we can have a little bit longer conversation
sure.
about this, I'd be grateful. And that the other question that I would ask you is, you said you've been interim director for about 4 months. Can somebody tell us what the process is? Because I always worry about interim directors, whether they have the level of authority and the opportunity to build program the way you're obviously inclined and appropriately inclined to do. So I'm just curious about the interim part of your title and what the plan is around that.
We're in the process of hiring a full-time tribal affairs director. I think it's just a process. HR is, again, I'm new to the whole state process, but it's, you know, I'm doing two jobs right now, and it's difficult, but I'm doing the best I can, and so I hope that
you're doing a great job, Ms. Johnson. We're trying to support you in doing what you want to do.
I know that we're going to get somebody hired soon. So.
Okay.
Yeah, the recruitment, Senator Hayward, committee co-chairs. Sorry, protocol. No,
it's
trying
all
to,
good. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, the recruitment started, some weeks ago, and we've had a very formal process. We have solicited candidates. We have gone through screening. We are getting down to finalists.
Okay.
I'm pleased to point out that one of those candidates is sitting at the table with me now.
Good.
We expect to have that done pretty soon.
Great. Thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure that we were supplying this important position with somebody who has the authority to do what she needs to do. And the, give the tribes the, and build the relationship and the trust, which is obviously critical to the improvement all around. So,
and can I add to that?
Please.
One of the great things, again, is that we have representatives from all the 9 tribes and the Legislative Commission on Indian Services and NARA to be a part of this process.
Great.
And I think that's really, really important, because you're exactly right. If you don't have the relationships and the trust, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
And that's the only reason why I came to the state, is because I've been doing this for my entire career, and I do it because I love it. And so it's a great position, and I know that they'll get the right person in there. So.
Great, and I'm delighted that you've applied and that you're one of the finalists, Ms. Johnson. That's true.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Keep going.
I talked a little bit about the Medicaid waiver. One thing we're currently working on right now is the Tribal Engagement and Collaboration Protocol. So that was a piece that was added to the waiver specific for tribes. Again, this is a work group that the tribes work on. If you're familiar with the Northwest Portland Area and Health Board, their governmental affairs is Laura Patero. She works very closely with the health directors also, and so we've been doing this great dance back and forth between our Medicaid director, Lori Koiner, and her team, and the standard terms and conditions of that specific protocol, and the tribes will take it and work on it on their own and bring in all the pieces that they would like to see, and then we'll all get back together. And so that's got to be submitted here come April, and so that's just one of the major big projects we're working on right now for the waiver. And then the last thing was about the 100% FMAP. Again, this is a savings for the state, and the great thing that our governor has done is said that whatever savings we get from that, we will put it back towards tribal health programs. And so obviously the tribes appreciate that, and the state appreciates that. And we've gone through a pretty big process to get that going. We actually have two claims that have been submitted, and one has been paid. We still have questions from CMS that we're working through, but the tribes wanted to get at least one through and see it through from start to finish, and that's happened. So care coordination agreements have been set up with hospitals and clinics and different partners with the tribes in their local areas, and we're just going to keep working on it and pushing it through. We're just waiting for tribes to submit more claims, and our health systems division staff is really on top of it, and they've set up a whole process to walk them through it and get those claims paid. So it's just a great opportunity again.
Great. Mm-hmm. Good. One quick last question. So we know that you work with the 9 Confederate tribes. Do you also keep track of all the other tribes that live in Oregon?
So yeah, so we have 9 federally recognized tribes. That's the government-to-government relationship we have. Many tribes, you know, they have service areas. I'm not sure if you're familiar with service areas, but they can serve their tribal members and other tribe. They designate if they serve other tribal members also within their county service areas. And some of them are very large. For example, Confederate Tribe of the Siletz Indians has an 11-county service area. And so their tribal members are spread out all throughout. But there's other Native people there that they could serve as well. We know there's a very large Native population in Portland metro area. And through NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association, they have an IHS-funded clinic. So they serve a number of tribal members from all over the nation there because of relocation and, you know, things that have happened. A lot of Natives have actually were the 9th highest, Portland's the 9th highest Native population in the nation. So NARA is a huge resource for us. Also NAYA, the Native American Youth Association, provide a lot of social services and stuff with people. So we partner with them. We partner very closely with NARA. NARA's at the table with the health directors on all of these issues. And then NAYA, I know that like we fund them for some public health stuff with the immunizations and just supporting, you know, a lot of the programs, both NARA and NAYA are cultural activities and just really trying to support families where they're at. And so we try to know and understand what they're doing and how we can support them, and they can support us in different ways. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Okay, so I'd like to move on to going through the central services and then the state assessment and enterprise-wide cost budget. Janelle, going to introduce yourself there?
Hi, Janelle Evans, Budget Director for the Oregon Health Authority. Okay, so the first slide is our central services budget. The total is $36 million. It's 65% general funds and 28% federal. The next slides are going to be central and our statewide assessments budget. Both of those combined are 2% of our total OHA budget.
So let me butt in here, maybe.
Yes,
Madam Chair. As we're talking about assessments, I just wanted members to have a little context. So, like, for instance, there's a number of these assessments that are paid to DAS for central kinds of government services. This committee doesn't actually look at possibilities of reducing those assessments. Rather, that is done in the general government subcommittee that hears the DAS budget. So if that committee decides that the DAS budget can be smaller, these assessments that affect all the agencies will be reduced. And we typically will do that in the end of session bill, not actually in the agency budget bill, because we don't have the final numbers till fairly late.
Thank you.
So this slide just points out some of the highlights on what is included in our state assessments and enterprise-wide costs, our state government service charges, risk assessments, facilities, unemployment charges. Those are the kind of things that are in this budget. The budget for state assessments is $285.2 million. And then here's a further breakdown of the budget for all those areas. The facilities budget is 32 million total funds. I'm not going to read through them all, just highlighting some of the larger ones. The state data center, 41 million total funds. State CIO is just over 6 million. Do you have any specific questions on these?
No. I mean, I think these are pretty straightforward.
Thank you. I think that concludes.
I think that's it for us, unless you have any other questions.
Yeah. And Mr. McDonald, you have a presentation, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Deserted you.
Last man standing.
After all. Oh, thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. I'm Tom McDonald. I work in the Chief Financial Office for the Department of Administrative Services. And after we've heard a number of presentations for the past few weeks over specific OHA programs, the goal of my presentation is to just give a high-level recap of the governor's budget recommendation. In working through this process, the governor had three overarching goals for the OHA budget. First, making healthcare foundational. And key to this is that the budget does not propose any cuts to healthcare services or eligibility. Two, protecting children in underserved areas. And this is reflective of what the budget preserves and recommends in terms of funding proposals. And three, shared responsibility for funding healthcare in Oregon, and specifically how should we sustainably fund the Oregon Health Plan, Medicaid, going forward. And the end result to all this is not simply a cuts budget or an enhanced budget. It is a mixed bag of some difficult decisions regarding revenue and program reductions, as well as a few strategic investment recommendations. Some of the emerging issues and general fund cost drivers that we face, and that we talked about in previous hearings, decrease in federal Medicaid matching funds was a huge challenge in terms of the decreased matching rate for the Medicaid expansion population, as well as our traditional Medicaid populations. Caseload changes, whereas the overall caseload is anticipated to decrease, there are some shifts into the higher general fund cost Medicaid caseloads. Costs of prescription drugs. Dr. Rickards in a previous meeting talked about escalating costs and the complexities with negotiating prices. And we've had some other funds, revenue issues, and as well, at the time we were developing the budget, the 1115 waiver had not been approved at that time. So looking at the budget, the governor's recommendation in a little bit more detail, this slide displays the 2013-15 budget by fund source all the way through the governor's budget recommendation. And a couple things I want to point out with this slide is with the general fund budget trend, you can see that at the dark blue bottom shaded parts of the graphs. And you can see the jump from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget to the current service level estimate. That was an estimated increase of a little over $1 billion. Most of that was in the Medicaid program. The governor's budget recommendation results in just a slight increase in general fund over the current budget, and that's through a series of revenue proposals and reductions. The other thing to point out is the total funds trend, and that's remained relatively flat from the current biennium to the governor's budget.
I keep going. I'm just going to reinforce something you just said because it's really important.
Yeah, and the key point I wanted to make with this is whereas the total budget is not changing very much, it's how it's financed.
Yeah, this is a really, really important point because you'll hear a lot of people saying that costs are out of control, and I don't think anybody would disagree that we need to be very, very thoughtful about how we spend money. But the vast majority of the quote-unquote deficit for the health authority has nothing to do with increased costs. It has everything to do with changes in our revenue structure and changes in the federal match rate. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be careful. Doesn't mean we shouldn't look to improve efficiencies where we can. Doesn't mean that we couldn't pare some programs down. Does mean that we have to be very careful about how we talk about it. So I just want to be crystal clear about this issue. Representative Bueller, do you want to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I completely agree with that statement. And I might add, totally predictable.
Yes,
for years
absolutely.
In advance.
Absolutely.
With very little, if any, planning for this day.
Yes, we would not disagree with you. I agree. I don't disagree with you in the slightest.
So, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
It would be helpful, though, and you don't have to do it today because we had the side conversation of talking about the redetermination and the reduce and the decrease in the numbers, that you actually show that, because there is this number floating out there of how much of what the expanded care the numbers were, and that is not an accurate number. I think I sent something to Ms. Ames Friday, but it's helpful when we're talking to the public that we get these numbers right.
Yep.
And so, you know, coming forward that we have that number of just what is the population and that we're talking about. So I get a thumbs up from Beth Ann out
yeah,
there.
We'll look forward to seeing a little more about that maybe
and
later on.
Members of the subcommittee, we have just completed the spring forecast process for caseload. So within a few weeks, there'll be a final publication of what we now believe the caseloads will be for 17-19.
Representative Hayden.
Just a brief comment. Thank you, co-chair. And maybe you can help me with this. I have asked the Oregon Health Authority to give me numbers that separate out the expanded population and a cash flow of that under the Oregon Health Authority. Have been unsuccessful in getting any reports that get presented to us in committees that look at the standard versus the expanded population and the funding streams related to those. I think it is critical to have that conversation so that as we talk with people, we can give them an honest perspective of what the expanded population has done versus the funding under the standard population. And I think there's been a desire to wrap those into one conversation, and they really are two different conversations. And I'd like to see the funding separate. I've been unable to get that request in the last couple of months, so maybe you can help me.
Tom, could you do that?
Yeah. Co-chairs in the committee, Representative Hayden, yes, we are working on that, and I believe we'll be able to provide that analysis to you. I'm going to look back at my budget directors for some timing this week.
Cool. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. McDonald.
So looking at the budget recommendation with just another view, And in terms of the expenditure categories, the budget remains essentially a special payments budget, so payments going out the door to other entities. 82%, the vast majority of that is Oregon Health Plan. Conversely, personal services or employee compensation remains a relatively, although big dollar amounts, but relatively a smaller part of the budget at around 5%. And as mentioned in the previous hearing, about half of the staff are Oregon State Hospital employees.
Which is in essence direct provision of care.
Correct.
Thank you.
One more look is a comparison of the total funds budget by program to the general fund budget by program area. You can see that, again, Oregon Health Plan, and in terms of total funds, makes up the majority of the budget, 72%. And the other programs, the next highest one is less than 10%. Well, when you look at the general fund budget by program, Oregon Health Plan is 55%, but then there are a few other key programs that have a much higher percentage of general fund in their budget. They have a higher percentage compared to their total funds portion. They're not higher than Oregon Health Plan.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't OHEB and PEB basically all general fund?
There's some federal funds in there. There's some other, like all the DAS people are.
I mean, we're all general fund. I mean, all of us who are, everybody in this room who's a government employee is, well, I mean, we're blended potentially from federal and state, but I don't even really see PEB on the general fund piece. And OHEB is virtually all, well, it's property taxes, but that's general fund.
So, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, and that's a really good point. This display shows how the funding sources are budgeted in OHA. So, in OHA, PEB and OHEB are budgeted with other funds because they're received from different agencies.
Yeah. This is my lifelong frustration with how we do budgets. Never mind. You're right, Mr. McDonald. But it's just frustrating to me because it's really not transparent. So, sorry. I get frustrated about lack of transparency in our budgeting process, and other funds is my biggest pet peeve. So, not your fault.
Thank you.
And just the point of the general fund display is I just want to point out that non-Medicaid behavioral health and Oregon State Hospital are also relatively large general fund portions of the budget. So I want to just close out with two slides as reminders of the cost savings measures and reforms included in the budget. This kind of calls back to the shared responsibility I mentioned at the beginning in terms of revenue and reduction proposals. I won't go through these all, but we want to mention there are proposals for hospital insurance and tobacco tax revenue, holding CCO cost growth flat starting January 1, and then a few others, closing Junction City Hospital and administrative reductions in the agency. And lastly, a summary of the key investments proposed in the budget. We've talked about Cover All Kids, expanding hepatitis C treatment, and you know there are a few others that I know we've talked about.
Okay. Questions? Representative Bueller.
So what's the plan for the facility of the closed Oregon State Hospital in Junction City?
So, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Bueller, that plan is what I can say to that is in general terms, it's still under development. You know, the governor's budget specifically proposed, starting the closure after the first full year of the biennium, in part to help develop that plan.
That's the subject of a lot of conversation, yes. Representative.
Yes, I'd like to. We have more time.
That'd be great. Thank you. Please.
And one more. In the budget for the Cover All Kids, how much is allocated to that?
Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, Representative Bueller, $55 million approximately is proposed in the budget.
Follow up. And that's not matched with any federal funds, is that correct?
Nope.
That is correct.
And if it was allocated to programs that would draw down federal funds on average, how much would that be? say, Medicaid expansion or the like?
The rough number that we use is 25-75 for Medicaid. I mean, if you look at our blended rate, mm-hmm. it's about 25% state general fund, 75%, so multiply it by three, and it would draw down another $165 million of federal if it went into the standard Medicaid program. And other things, the match rates are different. Am I right about that, about mm-hmm. right, Mr. Fairbanks?
Yes.
I think you're looking at, if you were able to actually do the match, how much then would be the general fund?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true, too.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I think it's important to note also on kind of that subject of funding matchability that the 1115 waiver, for the first time ever, we have been able to get dual eligibility on Medicare under this waiver. And so if there were investments, particularly in the Medicare realm of getting caseworkers or helping to access hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, held up in federal programs that are very hard to access through the individual physicians, dentists, whatever, healthcare provider directly, just because of the litany of paperwork they have to go through. If we would help support that under the new opportunity of this waiver, boy, we could really bring down the federal match under the CCO, but also access federal funds set aside particularly for these dual eligibility people on top of that. It starts to get exponential pretty quickly.
Representative, I'd like to follow up with you about that outside of committee, because okay. I'm not quite sure I completely track which part you're talking about, so I'll want a little bit more information later, but okay. we need to finish up. Anything else you want to finish up here, or are you good?
No, thank you. That's
okay. Any more questions, Mr. Fairbanks? Anything you want to wrap up with?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And just let the record reflect that Senator Gelser, through a combination of topography and meteorology, was unable to be here today. Yeah, she lives at the bottom of a very big hill in a car with not great traction and a lot of snow in Corvallis this morning. So anything else for the committee?
Members,
oh, sorry.
Just to let you know, tomorrow the Oregon Medical Board will be here, and I won't be here.
Okay. We'll have somebody new sitting next to us. Good. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.